Welcome to Against the Wind, Doctors in Science Under Fire. This is our episode where, my goodness, I get to talk with one of my living heroes, Sheila Lewis Ely. We've met before in person, and I have to say, your story has touched me probably more than any other ever. And this is what I want listeners to realize. When parents share stories of vaccine injury, they're doing it for you as an opportunity for you just to learn from their experience so that perhaps it might guide you in just having clearer thinking about the decisions you may have to make. So welcome to the show, Sheila. I'm so glad you're here today.
Thank you, Dr. Thomas. I'm glad to be here. I remember when we met, it was 2016 in Washington, D.C. at dinner.
Yep. We sat together at dinner and I felt like I was sitting with a celebrity.
Oh, you humbled me.
because you are so articulate in telling the story of what happened to your son Temple. Maybe you could start there just for our listeners.
Sure.
to be updated on kind of how that sort of set you on the journey, I think, of where you are now.
It did. 20 years ago, actually on my birthday, my 12-month-old son was injured by vaccines. Now, he had been injured at 5 months, but I didn't really understand what was going on. He developed this really high fever and he was lethargic. I kept taking him back and forth to Andrews Air Force Base, this emergency room, because my husband was active duty Coast Guard at the time. And all they told me to do was give him Tylenol. I said, but could it be the vaccines? And he said, oh no, this is a natural reaction to his vaccines. So I brought him home, nursed him back to health. And because he had had such a bad reaction, I didn't take him or his twin sister back for vaccines. And matter of fact, I gave him his 5-month vaccine, but she didn't get hers because the doctor had an emergency. So we left. It wasn't because I wasn't going to get hers. Well Baby Clinic, which was on a naval base, called and called and called, called every 2 months to bring the babies in for a visit. And I just wouldn't do it. Reluctantly, I thought, could this have been a reaction from these vaccines? But everyone I asked 20 years ago said no. So 12 months, I take both of the babies in, and I've got another daughter. She's only 14 months older than the twins. So I put them all in the triple stroller. We walked the mile and a half to the clinic. I take him out first, and the shots were lined up, the HIB, the DTaP, and the MMR for both babies, 3 for each. As he's getting his shots, his twin just started, she was wailing. She was crying so profusely. And then she tilted herself over. Now, 20 years ago, the type of stroller that I had these bars on the side. So even though she was strapped in, she managed to wiggle her way out and tilt her body over, so I didn't want her to hit her head. I picked her up to comfort her, and finally I got her quiet. And when I looked around, see what was going on with him, because he was screaming, I noticed one of the shots was missing. So I asked the physician assistant what happened to the other shot. And she said, what other shot? I said, you had 3 lined up for each one of these babies. Where's that shot? She said, oh my goodness, I think I gave it to him. I said, well, which one was it? And it was the MMR. He got a double dose of the MMR. Mm. So I told her to call the doctor in. The doctor comes in. She says, well, we can get another shot ready for your daughter. I said, oh, she's not getting shots today. I was furious. And I left. The minute we get back to our apartment, the doctor calls and said, she called Merck. And she wrote it in the file, actually. And they said he won't need the booster at 4, but he should be okay. Well, I lost him that night. Mm-hmm. The next morning, I go into his room, this little happy baby who was always bouncing on his crib and shaking, reaching for me to pick him up. He was lethargic. He was looking, staring out into space. He could not even attach anymore. His body went limp. And I put him on the floor. He had learned to walk because their birthdays was July 12th. Sister walked a month earlier. He walked exactly a day after his birthday. So he had been walking. He couldn't walk anymore. And he couldn't even crawl forward. He was a good crawler. And I took him to see a developmental pediatrician at Bethesda. And he told me, he's just baby B. He's going to be slow. I said, no. He may have been slow with his language coming in, but he was making sounds. He was mimicking. His eye contact was good. There's something wrong with my baby. So I immediately told my husband, I've got to go back to New Orleans and see the doctor that I'm accustomed to seeing, who was a personal friend of mine. I need for her to help me with this. Now, nowhere in my thought pattern was the word autism, because I had never seen it. I never saw it growing up. I don't understand how they could even say better diagnosis, because I would have recognized that diagnosis. There was no one I went to school with who had it. No one I grew up with who had it. No child that I had seen previously that looked the way my son looked. So the first step was to take him to my friend who's a pediatrician. And she said, I believe this is autism. I said, what? What is that? She said, let me not even get into it right now. Let's get you a referral. Let's see a neurologist. I said, okay, fine. So I go in, my husband and myself, we bring the baby, and the attending nurse comes out and she says, he doesn't just give this diagnosis because it's rare. Fill out this form about what your child is doing. He's going to want to see your child, and then he's going to refer you out for therapies and then to come back. And I'm thinking to myself, okay, that's a good thing, because I looked up the word. So we go in to see him, and I went in first because my husband had to go change Temple's diaper. And he's telling me the same thing the nurse had told me, what to expect. And he was very, very stern. He couldn't even believe I was there. So he said, I don't understand why you were referred for this, because this is a really rare diagnosis. I said, well, I personally don't want to be here, but these behaviors that I'm seeing and what's happened to my son, there's something more going on. So when my husband came in, he had already told me, well, we're going to take about an hour at this appointment. We set aside that time to look at his motor skills, to look at how his reflection and the different things that he's doing. When my husband came in, he told my husband, put him on the floor. And he said, I don't even need 5 minutes with this child. This child obviously has classic Caner's autism. I said, what's that? He said, he was born with it. I said, no, he was not. He says, well, he's severely autistic. I said, are you telling me my son has a condition like that movie Rain Man? Because that's the first time I'd ever seen anyone with autism. And honestly, when I watched that movie, I thought it was a Hollywood lie. I thought it was something they had made up.
How long, Sheila, sorry to interrupt, how long after that those vaccines were given were you having that evaluation where they're telling you it's classic autism?
2 months.
In 2 months.
Within 2 months, because I traveled home and it took that long to get. First, I took him to the developmental pediatrician at Bethesda. And after that, nothing of a diagnosis.
Right.
He's just slow. He's baby B. I took him home.
Yeah. So, but you noticed the change was immediately that same night, that next day.
He
wasn't walking. How was eye contact at that point? Was that
it
also?
It was gone.
Everything was gone.
Everything was gone. My child was gone. And you know what's really tragic about that diagnosis? It's a ruse. It's a lie. It is a diagnosis given for brain injury, mitochondrial injury, because he started to make, once I got back to New Orleans and I stayed, and I arranged to have therapy and everything for him, because by 18 months, I'd seen 6 physicians, all specialists in their field. And by the last one, my husband told me, we're done. How many times you've got to hear that this child's going to need to be institutionalized and he's severely autistic? He says, that's a wrap on that. So I advocated for ABA therapy for my son through this clinic that I'd gone to, because I was furious when I left the neurologist. And I told him, I'm not leaving this office until you give me some satisfaction. So he gave me the personal number of a child psychologist who had just opened a clinic in New Orleans. And I called him immediately from my truck. And he answered the phone. He told me I'm out of town. He says, we're setting up an autism clinic because we're seeing more children like your son. He said, I'm going to call and get you in within 2 weeks. I said, no, I need to see you this week. That's not going to work for me. And I was so furious. And I'm not a crybaby. It takes a lot to make me cry. He said, okay, let me see what I can do. So I saw him within 2 days. And when I saw the pediatrician that he used, the first question he asked me, how did you get this diagnosis? This isn't a condition for Black children. I said, what? He bleeds red like everyone else. He says, we don't see Black children with this condition. This is 20 years ago. And in my advocacy work, that's when I started advocating and telling the truth, because what I realized at that moment, what happened to me happened out of ignorance, because I trusted a system that did not protect my son and didn't care that he was different and that all of our bodies were not the same. So I started singing like a canary. I mean, I was talking to everybody. I went to every doctor I knew. I started going to conferences. I wanted to learn more and more and more about this condition. And what I discovered was I was right on the cusp of the avalanche of these children.
Yes.
I was there when Dan was started. I was there when all of the doctors got together and were trying to figure out exactly what was going on. But what I didn't know at that time, he had more. Those vaccines actually damaged his mitochondrial cells, and that's why he was so floppy. So we had just a mound of tragedies during that time. I mean, we got washed out for Katrina. We were displaced and called refugees in Texas. For nearly 2 years, we were homeless. And then we came back to New Orleans, and it was just a nightmare. I mean, I was sleeping on the floor with rats because I couldn't get a FEMA trail. So by the time we got everything back established again, he started morphing. And I started noticing there's something else wrong with him. So I had become personally involved with a lot of the damn doctors. I was taking them everywhere. And a prominent one told me one day, she said, Sheila, I've taken him as far as I can take him. He's a hard nut to crack. There's something else wrong with him, but I don't know exactly what. So I go back home. I get involved with the Autism Society of Greater New Orleans. And the president of the society calls me one day. She said, Sheila, there's a geneticist in town, and he wants a seminar. I said, for what? We've all been through genetics, because back then they were only doing a few rats and a few others. I said, okay, well, I'll talk to him. So he called me, I talked to him, and I said, listen, we've all been through genetics. What good is that going to do us? We're not interested. He says, well, I want to tell you something. We now know that there are 77 genetic conditions that are primary and autism is secondary. And when he told me that, I said, okay, let me give you a seminar. So I gave him a seminar. We had about 150 parents who showed up to the seminar. He comes in and I'm listening, and he shows this child with mitochondrial disease, and he goes through the whole slide presentation. And I couldn't believe what I was seeing. After that, I said, listen, here's a picture of my son. I believe he has that condition. He told me, he said, I can see something different in him. He says, he'll be my first patient. So Temple was his first patient. And back then, we had to do the whole genome sequence, which was about $30,000. You know, we didn't have these small 23andMe's and just a simple blood test to see if you had a condition like mitochondrial disease. So Temple had to go in as an outpatient to do a muscle biopsy, along with the blood work. All of that went off to Baylor, and then it went to the UK, to the Genome Institute. Took 8 months for it to come back. And imagine my surprise when he told me he had primary mitochondrial disease complex 1. I said, what is that? And when he explained it to me, I asked him, I said, so I want you to look at me and tell me that that double dose of the MMR with those other vaccines didn't do this. He said, I cannot. Yes, this is a child that never should have been vaccinated.
That's the important message, right? There are so many people walking around having children who should not be vaccinated, and we're not doing anything about it to personalize right. medicine. We're just using this one size fits all approach with now, of course, mandates. It's eliminating informed consent. And I know you've been a big advocate for informed consent. Yes. Because had you known, obviously.
I never would have done it. There's several reasons why I wouldn't have done it. I would not have done it if I understood the ingredients that were in vaccines. I would have gone and discussed that decision with my elders, because I had a grandmother, and by that time she was dead, she was deceased, who told me, never trust a white coat. She said, because they experiment on you. She said, don't marry a military man. They experiment on him, and then they're going to want to experiment on you. Why, she was right. But I had parents who came out of third world America. They grew up on cotton plantations as sharecroppers in homes that didn't have running water or a bathroom. And they had been in those cotton fields and walking to school because they didn't have a school bus to take them to school. Like my father, school ended at sixth grade. So at 13, he left home and was on his own.
Wow.
These are the parents I grew up with, and they were very proud people. They worked hard and achieved what they achieved. And they told my brother and myself, I have one sibling, there's nothing you can't achieve, and you don't allow the color of your skin to stop you. However, they assimilated after the civil rights movement. And by assimilation, I mean, they wanted to be able to go and see doctors, because back then we didn't see doctors. They did home remedies and remedies that had been passed down from generation to generation that went all the way back to slavery. They worked, but they wanted to become a part of this American society that they thought was so much better. And as a result, we no longer were taught all of the stories that we had heard, the oral history of our people and our plight. I knew them, but as a child, you forget these things. Not that you want to forget them, but you move on with life, you assimilate into the world, and you feel like you've arrived and the world is your oyster.
Yes. I think you have a movie you want to tell the world about that might sort of dovetail nicely with what you were just talking about. Maybe you can share that.
Yes. So Children's Health Defense Fund with Robert Kennedy Jr. We've done a film called Medical Racism, The New Apartheid. And this film chronicles the history of Black indigenous people in this country and what they have experienced with the medical industry all the way back to slavery. The reason why this film is so important is because it not only tells you the past history, but it tells you the current history, because the ones who decided what would be in the history books and how the medical industry would operate left these types of stories out. As a society, whether you're Black, brown, or white, we don't know these things. So now we're all a part of an apartheid, medical apartheid association that does not care about the individuality of our genetic code, nor does it care about informed consent. They don't feel like they have to give it, and they're not giving it. They have not given it. You go in to bring your child to a well baby visit, and you think that you're doing the right thing because you've been told, we need these vaccines. They need these vaccines for school. All of these childhood infections are so dangerous, but yet you don't know the history of how we got here, that we've never needed those vaccines for these conditions, and that there are children who can't take these vaccines because of underlying genetic conditions, you're the pawn that they're using to stomp out your child's life, your child's health, and the future of your heritage, because that's what children are. They're our heritage. They're the most important gifts that we bring into this world. It doesn't matter if you have money and you don't have money. What does that matter? What matters is if you can bring a healthy child into this world and you can raise that child to be a healthy individual, because with health, that's your wealth. You can achieve almost anything as long as your brain's intact and your body's intact.
Yes.
But without that, it breaks the bank. It breaks your spirit. It crumbles the family dynamic.
Absolutely.
And we've seen it over and over.
Yeah. Where can people find this movie?
If they go to childrenshealthdefense.org, the movie is the first thing that pops up, and it's free.
Wonderful.
Download it. Have your friends watch it. Send it out to other groups, because this movie is important. It's important, especially now when we're dealing with COVID-19 and experimental reprogramming of your DNA, because I can't even call it a vaccine. It's important that people understand that your compliance is an agreement to what's going on in our country this day and what's going on around the world today. You have to be informed. If you don't have sovereignty over your body, you're enslaved. That's all you have when you come into this world, the sovereignty of your body. We're forced to pay taxes. We're forced to watch our tax dollars being used for things we don't agree with. We're forced to comply by laws that are egregious to who we are as individuals, especially those of us who are spiritual and religious. And yet we've complied to all of that. But if you comply to lockdowns, to masks, and to injections of an experimental substance that killed all of the animals it was tested on and is killing so many people worldwide, then you have agreed to your own enslavement and your demise. And people need to understand that.
Absolutely. That is so well articulated. I believe you've had within your family actual tragedy with COVID vaccine.
Yeah. I've had family members who have taken the vaccine and two have passed away.
Wow. How soon after the vaccines did they pass away?
One within 3 weeks and the other one within two.
My goodness. And of course, you know, you have this mitochondrial family history, I would say.
Yes.
Which I'm sure puts your family members at greater risk for vaccine injury, I imagine.
Well, the thing about genetics, it loads the gun, but vaccines pull the trigger.
Yeah.
I have so many genetic abnormalities myself that I passed on to my son. I had no idea about. I have two rare SNP panels, two of the most dangerous. So a mother always passes it on to the son and every other daughter. My middle daughter has it and Temple has it. Now, this is only by the grace of God that Temple lives, because when he was born, the vitamin K wasn't mandatory. Had he had the vitamin K, he would have been a SIDS baby. And yet, everything that mothers, millions of mothers around the world have said or researched is being debunked. When in the history can we ever look back and say mothers were so devalued in looking to see what was going on with their child? Yet before this avalanche of autism, the vaccine injury called autism, you would take your child into anywhere, an emergency room, a pediatrician's office, a specialist, and the first thing they wanted to know What's your observation of your child, except for this?
Right. Somehow we've just sort of canceled the mother's intuition. We've neglected the fact that parents know their children best.
Yes.
And we've removed your ability in most cases, unless you're really a strong fighter like you certainly are today. Most parents walk into the doctor's office and they give up their autonomy, they give up their power, they give up their freedom, as you put it. And it's tragic because our kids are suffering because of this. I'm thinking about the COVID vaccine situation, and we just had on our last show the story that's coming out of Israel of these vaccine passports that are already being required to travel, to enter places of business, and it's already coming to the United States. That reminds me, I grew up in Southern Africa, Rhodesia, before it was Zimbabwe. I went to high school in Swaziland, traveling through South Africa, where apartheid was just, you know, that was the law of the land. And if you were African in South Africa at that time, you could not move from one area to another without your papers. Think of this passport for this vaccine, no different than apartheid was.
That's right.
We abolished apartheid finally through, you know, so much tragedy and hardship. And now we're just sort of rolling over and allowing that sort of system to become the rule of our land. It's exactly. Insanity. What can we do, Sheila?
What we have to do, we have to stop preaching to the choir. There's a small group of us, and we don't need to preach to the choir anymore. We don't need another gathering of the same people coming in. What we need to do is ask the choir to stand up and to start organizing as they did during the civil rights movement. I've always called this a civil rights issue. I've called this a human rights issue, and I've called this the worst form of discrimination. If those passports are allowed to pass and be allocated from state to state to state, then you can forget about it. You've lost your freedom. There is no more freedom. And we're all under subjugation and lockdown. So before it gets to that, we need to have the choir, those of us who understand what's going on, to gather in every city, whether it's 5 of us, 4 of us, 10 of us, 100 of us, or 1,000 of us, and go from business to business without masks. If we can't shop there, have your pamphlet to pass out to those who are in the stores, letting them know how dangerous these masks are and what's actually happening. You're about to embark upon medical apartheid and enslavement within your country. We are to ask these businesses, those who will not participate, why won't they participate? Give them the information, get it in writing, what they say, because we're already being censored, and put that story out everywhere. Shop at the businesses that will have us. Stop going to these large chains and go to farmers who need the income. Buy locally your foods without a mask, without social distancing. Pull your children out of those schools. You cannot afford not to. I don't want to hear anymore, well, I have to work. Did you work this last year? How did that work? How did that work out for you? Because they showed you what they can take away from you. Schools are not free, and they're not appropriate public schools. That is the biggest lie that's ever been told, and I've said it over and over. We pay property taxes, city taxes, state taxes, and federal taxes. All of those dollars are poured back into those schools. So you tell me who owns those schools. We, the American people. But we bought a bunch of lies and deceptions and myths. And now it's time for the truth to rise and people understand what this truth is. That is how we make a change. Any church that's taking money to celebrate vaccines and tell you that God says it's okay for you to take those vaccines, call them out as the heretics that they are and start having church outside. Jesus didn't think enough of a church, a synagogue, to build one after he walked out of the temple. His ministry was foot on his feet, city by city. And that's how we make a change. Otherwise, this country is going to go down. And it won't go down because of those of us who have been out here telling the story is going to go down for those who have complied. And you will have no one to blame but yourselves.
I've got goosebumps, and I'm going to leave it at that. That is, I was going to ask you, you know, what's the message you want to give the world? You just did it. Thank you. Thank you, Sheila, for sharing from your heart. You are a true leader in this movement to help set people free and to save our country and to save the world. I hope the world is listening, and I hope we mobilize behind this effort. Do you have any particular resources where you would say people should go here to get their information? Because, you know, the information that's out there on the mainstream channels is just close to worthless.
It is. Children's Health Defense has a news article that they put out daily called The Defender. Everything that's happening worldwide, they're already talking about it. Please subscribe. It's free. You can donate if you want to, but you don't have to. Subscribe to The Defender. Read those articles. Learn how you can get involved, because this is what it's going to take. This is a grassroots effort. This country was fought and won on grassroots efforts, and nothing is going to come easy for us. So stop looking for the easy way out. There is no such thing as I'm just going to sit back and wait and see what happens. We all have a part to play, and we all have to get involved. It is your life, but it's not just your life. It is the lives of the next 7 generations. And you have to ask yourself, your children, your children's children, and thereon, how do you want them to be able to live in this world? There are shackles with no bounds. I'm not binded up here in a shackle, but yet we've been under house arrest, all of us, for over a year now. So you tell me if that's not a form of enslavement.
Folks, Children's Health Defense is absolutely the most amazing resource I've been able to find. And you can ask any question on their website, search, and you will find the answers. If it has anything to do with vaccines, if it has anything to do with medical freedom, informed consent, or what's actually going on in the world today that is important, that is vital, I hope you will visit and sign up for that newsletter, read it, get your research there, because they are beholden to no one. They are not in anybody's pocket. They are simply telling the truth and sharing the information that you're not getting through all the mainstream channels. The censorship that's going on in most of the mainstream outlets is so massive that the truth cannot even come through. So check this out and join us. Thank you, Sheila. I think we're just going to put this up as is. There's no edit needed. This is amazing. Maybe it's just its own show. You are so articulate. Thank you for gracing us with your wisdom and your knowledge and your passion.
Well, thank you for having me, Dr. Thomas. I appreciate it. And it's so good to see you again.
Oh, it's delightful to see you. I given everything you've gone through, I can't imagine how you just are a radiance of light and hope and truth. You bless us all. Thank you.
You're welcome. God bless you.
God bless you too.
Thanks for watching. I pledge to you to bring to you honest and vital content that's going to help you first do no harm to yourself or to your children. Help me spread the truth and share this on social media and with your friends at doctorsinscience.com. This is going to be a show every other week, and as soon as we get adequate funding, we're going to bring this to you weekly. We stand together for medical freedom and informed consent. Only you should decide what's injected into your body. So I look forward to running with you against the wind. Go to our website, doctorsinscience.com, sign up, donate if you can, and let's make this the weekly show the nation's been waiting for. I'm Dr. Paul.